Hello and welcome to Pillars of Wealth Creation, where we talk about creating financial success with a special focus on business and real estate. I'm your host, Todd Dexheimer. Now, let's get to it. Hey, are you looking to expand and grow your business? Are you looking for that edge, that next step up, that paradigm shift? Well, one of the best ways to get you there is through a mentor or a coach. And today's sponsor, Trevor McGregor, he is the man. He's going to get you to be laser focused, to get you onto that next level. And I know from experience dealing with Trevor, he is a master coach, peak performance coach, well over 10,000 coaching hours through clients all over the world. And he helps you achieve better health, more wealth and freedom and contribution than you ever thought possible. Have that coach that holds your feet to the fire. Go on to Trevor's website, coachwithtrevor.com. Again, it's coachwithtrevor.com. And there you can get a free strategy session with Trevor. And you can decide if he's the right fit for you and you're the right fit for him. Again, it's coachwithtrevor.com. You will not be disappointed. Hello and welcome to Pillars of Wealth Creation. I'm your host, Todd Dexheimer. And with me is John Stiles with Bridge Realty. John, how are you doing?
I'm doing great, Todd. It is a good day to be alive. And yourself?
I'm doing fantastic. We are going to continue our apartment series today. We're going to be going and diving into building the team. And last week we talked about how to find a broker. And today we're going to talk more about just the rest of the team and what it takes to become an apartment owner. Because if you're going to be a business owner in any realm, you need to have a team. You need to have people in place in order to be successful. And so we'll dive into that. Before we get to that, I was at the Best Ever Conference last weekend, this last weekend, and just met a ton of fantastic people at that conference. So it was, a little plug for Joe Fairless and his conference. It was a lot of fun meeting just a bunch of players in the industry. It's always fun when you talk to like-minded people. So conferences like that, events like that are just fantastic. A lot of good time there. So
very cool. I missed out.
Yeah.
What was one of the big takeaways that you had from the conference?
I don't know if there was a big takeaway. How this conference was is it's kind of like his show. And anybody who hasn't listened to his show, it's Joe Fairless. They can look it up by his name or the best real estate investing advice ever. But he just talks in the show about a lot of different topics, real estate related. And that's kind of what this show was, a lot of different topics, real estate related. I guess one of my favorite things about the show was you're going to get punched in the face. You got to get back up and keep on rolling. Probably just the best part about the conference, not even was the speakers. And there were some great speakers. Terrell Fletcher, who used to be a running back with the San Diego Chargers. He was there and spoke. And Trevor McGregor, who I had on the show, spoke. Andrew Campbell, who will be on the show in just a few weeks, spoke. Of course, Joe Fairless spoke, and he'll be on the show coming up soon. I'm trying to think. I might be leaving somebody out. But they so there's a lot of good speakers, but probably the best part was just meeting like-minded people. And so just the networking and being able to meet just a ton of great people and talk with them and get their opinions on the market and what's going on and what they are doing and all that kind of stuff. So just good time.
Very good. Cool.
Yeah. So let's dive in then. We're going to talk a little bit more about the teams and in place. So let's dive into that and get going on it.
So there are several other team members. You've actually put together a list of about 12 other team members. And so the first one, and maybe the most important one, is a property manager. So what would you say about the importance of a property manager?
Yeah, I mean, a property manager is definitely probably the most critical part, like you said, of the team, especially after you have the deal under contract, but they can really be critical before you have the team under contract. And that, there you go. Talk about the conference again. Jason Urusi, who is a apartment buyer, he bought a 94-unit deal, and that came directly from the property manager he had formed a relationship with. So if he hadn't formed that relationship with a property manager before he bought a building in the market, he wouldn't have bought that building. So he got a great deal on that building, and that came directly from that property manager. So, and more than just finding a property, a good property manager can help guide you in that market. They can help look at properties. If you send them a deal and say, hey, I'm looking at this deal, or I got an offer out on this deal, what's your opinion? They'll give you their opinion on it. They might tell you, you know, your rent comps are way off, or whatever it might be. So I think they're a very critical part of your team during the due diligence phase. They're going to walk through that property. They should. You got to find the right property manager that walks through every single unit with you. They help with your underwriting. They're going to ensure that everything is set up the right way, because they want to perform on that property. At least that's the company that you want, is one that wants to perform on the property. So like anything else that we talk about today, though, not all property management companies are the same. And so you want to find the right one that fits for you. When we're talking about property management companies, we want to find a property management company that specializes in what you are buying. And that's really important. It's what I think a lot of people mix up is, you know, we don't want to find a property management company that, let's say we're buying a property in a C-class area. You don't want to find a property management company that's managing mostly A-class. If you've got a value add component to your project, maybe a heavy renovation, you want to find a property management company that has handled those before that can handle yours. Because that's different than just any property management company. So you've got to make sure you interview them, get referrals, and make sure that they're dealing with the types of property you're dealing with. If you've got, like, for instance, I looked at a building the other day and I wasn't going to buy it because of some issues with it. But I was interested in buying it, and the property manager that walked it with me said, you know, oh, geez, it's got too many Section 8 tenants. I would remove all the Section 8 tenants, or remove a lot of the Section 8 tenants. And for that building in that location, that wouldn't be a good choice. So that property management company wouldn't be a good choice for that building in that location. Now, the location and the building didn't work for me, but if it did, that property manager wouldn't have been the right fit for it, because they want to remove a big part of what my tenant base, and that should be my tenant base there. So you got to make sure, again, they're the right fit for that particular property and not just only for you. So I would say, as far as once you find that property management company, you got to make sure you communicate properly with them. So it's not all about what they communicate. It's not that, oh, they're not calling me every week. You've got to be on top of it. You've got to be able to schedule a weekly call with them. You've got to be able to make sure they understand your expectations very thoroughly, and not just kind of, oh, we hope they know it. You should have a whole plan written out for them and make sure that they understand the plan for the property and what you're looking for. So,
I think they call that managing the manager, right?
Yeah, managing the manager, exactly. So, John, you worked for a property management company in your previous life. Anything else that you want to add to that on property management?
Yeah, you know, my experience was mostly in the 1-4 unit property types, mm-hmm. So not exactly in apartments. And in that field, we were able to oversee a whole portfolio by ourselves, whereas probably when you get into a larger management company with larger unit numbers and larger buildings, they're going to have a lot more specialization. You know, you're going to have the accountants, you're going to have the maintenance manager, you're probably going to have, you know, the customer or tenant relations. So you're going to have probably a lot more specialization for those different roles. So just different things to think about with that. Also, while you're managing the manager, I suppose it'd be good to talk about how do you not go overboard on that? Because the manager, you know, if they're a good company, they're already going to have their systems in place. They're already going to have the way they do business. Not that they can't, you know, tailor what they have to you, but to a certain extent, you have to let them do their job. You know, we have, I remember we had some clients who were kind of overbearing that, you know, yeah, just let me do my job type of thing. So I don't know. Do you have any thoughts on how you balance that?
Well, I think it's about expectations, right? So you need to understand what they are looking for, and you need to understand what you're looking for. I think as far as an apartment building, like, you know, if you've got a 20 unit apartment building with a property manager, do you need a weekly call? No. Do you need a monthly call? Yeah, you should do a monthly call. But if you've got, let's say you bought four buildings and they're each 100 units, so now you've got 400 units with a property manager, should you have a weekly call? I would say you're probably looking at, yeah, let's have a weekly call, at least at the very least a bi-weekly call, and where you're just talking with them about what's going on with the property. It's not necessarily that you're telling them exactly like how to do their job, but you want to find out, you know, what's going right, what's going wrong, what's the kind of complaints. Are we on, especially if you're doing a value add, you know, are we on track? So I think a once a week phone call is very important on a factor like that. You know, but if you've got one building with them and it's, you know, like I said, like 20 units or 30 units or something like that, a weekly phone call is probably too much. Maybe when you first start, a weekly or biweekly phone call, especially if you are doing a value add. But after that, you know, probably not as much as important. And then emails, you know, I request that my property managers email me, you know, on a weekly basis, and it doesn't have to be a long email. So you can, you know, you can do something like that, phone call or both, you know, so really just constant communication, I think, is important. But understanding who you are in, you know, in their company, are you a 20 unit property owner and they manage thousands of units? You know what, taking every single week and talking to them every single week, especially when the property is just cash flowing, is probably not that critical. It's probably a little overbearing on them. And like you said, let me do my job. But if you're doing a big value add component on 100 unit building or 300 unit buildings, then yeah, should you be calling them every week? Likely.
Sure.
So,
and a lot of the companies these days have some good software where the owners can log in to check the status of rents or repairs or different things like that.
Yeah, and that's the other thing. That, like, a weekly call is not that important. If you, like I said, if your building is running smooth, it's 95% occupancy, you're not doing a value add component, it's just operating, do you need to talk to them every single week about that property? Likely not. Likely, you know, once a month kind of check in, or even an email check in. Like you said, you've got the online stuff you can just log into at Folio or whatever it is that they're using, and check out what's going on. So, All right. So any more on that one before we move on?
There's a lot we could go into about different aspects of it, but, you know, I think the main thing is probably, you know, talk to a few different options, see what their model is for their business, and see what's going to fit best with what your investment strategy is.
I think one thing to hit on real quick is the size of the property management company. So you've got different sizes, right? You've got the mom and pop type management companies that maybe manage 100 or 200 or maybe even 300 units, but not much more. And those companies are, they have their place in the market and they can definitely be good. Then you have the property management companies that maybe manage 1,000 or 2,000 or 3,000 or even more. So you've got to think about what your needs are. And there's different things. There's good and bad about both, right? So the big companies are going to likely be better at handling large projects. They're likely going to have better software programs. They're likely going to be able to, you know, handle you more if you've got a lot of units and large units. But they're going to be typically a little more expensive. They might not be quite as one-on-one with you. They might not be quite as flexible with you either. Like if you want them to change their lease or change their agreement terms one way or the other, they maybe just, that's how they do it. And they're not going to do it for you just because you want them to. Where a smaller management company can be a lot more flexible. You're dealing with likely the head or one of the top people. So, you know, there's good things with that too. So I would say it really depends on where you're at, what you're purchasing. But there's good and bad for both. So you kind of got to interview them and feel them and try to figure out what is going to fit with your personality as well.
Yep.
Before we go into the next one too, one thing I want to say is, and maybe I said this the last time, I don't remember, but when we're trying to find a team members, one of the most critical things to me is you've got to get referrals, right? And so how do you get referrals? Well, you can find a couple brokers, go on to LoopNet or CoStar or whatever, find a couple brokers in the area and then ask them for referrals. And ask them for a property management referral, attorney referral, property inspector referral, all that kind of stuff. And we'll talk about all the other people. So ask them for referrals for that. And then call those people, call those referrals, and start asking them for referrals of brokers and all that kind of stuff. And so you're going to get this big, long list of different people that were referred to you. And you're going to see on that list, you're going to see like the same name 5-6 times. And you'll go, okay, that person's got, you know, I've been referred to that person like, you know, 7 times, and the next person on the list has only been referred twice. I'm going to call that person. They're maybe not the right person for you, but you should actually take them pretty seriously. So that's a great way to build a long list of referrals and back referrals and get everybody kind of in that market that are really doing business. So,
yeah, that's a great tip.
So let's move on. We got attorneys. They're our next one. And it's critical that when you're doing real estate, especially an apartment building, especially when we're doing a larger apartment building, that we get an attorney that's going to either draft our purchase and sale agreement, our PSA, or at least review it if the realtor has their own documents. And a lot of commercial agents don't want to use the agent documents. You know, in residential real estate, we mostly always use the MLS forms, but in commercial, oftentimes we're not using the MLS forms. Some agents just won't use them. Some agents will, but even if they do, you should have your attorney review them because you're talking about a lot bigger dollar amount and a lot more moving parts in a commercial apartment transaction. So, then the attorney, you know, depending on the state you're in, you can either use a title company or attorney to do all your closings. So they're going to, you know, do the title exams and title insurance and lien coverage and make sure your company is legit. So they got to do opinions for the lender. And so they're going to kind of be the key to getting this deal from start to finish, get it through the finish line with the lender and through, you know, that process, make sure you got actually a real property. The other attorney is a securities attorney. So if you're raising equity, if you're doing a syndication, you're going to need a securities attorney that's going to help you set that up properly. So that would be the other attorney that you may or may not need.
Yeah. And when you're bringing attorneys onto your team, and you're typically finding them in the market that you are investing in versus, you know, one that's local to you?
Yeah. So there's two answers to that, right? The securities attorney could be in any market, really anywhere. You don't need a securities attorney that's local necessarily, and you don't need a securities attorney that's necessarily local to that market because it's securities, right? So that's a federal thing. So you could have a securities attorney that lives in Texas, and you could be living in Minnesota and investing in Ohio. So you could have a securities attorney really anywhere. You just got to make sure they understand securities laws.
The
other attorney, yeah, I would have the other attorney where in the state, in the city even, that, or in the general region that you're investing in. So if you're investing in Minneapolis, I would have an attorney that's based in the Twin Cities area somewhere. So I think that's, yeah, the area that the purchase is in, I would say.
Yeah. I don't know if this is the right spot to bring this up, but as somebody's preparing financially to make a purchase, is there a certain amount of money that they should be budgeting for attorneys?
Yeah, yes, and it depends, right? So if you're purchasing a 20-unit building, it's going to be a lot different than if you're purchasing a 200-unit building. So a syndication, if you're doing a syndication, that's going to cost you anywhere between about $10,000 to $20,000, and sometimes even higher. So, you know, it depends on what type of offering you're doing. It could be $50,000. So, but you're going to at least be probably closer to 10, right? But I would talk with the securities attorney, before you do that and say, hey, this is what I'm doing. You know, I'm going to have whatever, raise $2.3 million. And this is kind of what we're doing. What about am I going to be paying in fees? So you can get an understanding of that. And then same thing with the local attorney. It depends on what they're doing, right? If they're drafting the PSA completely from start to finish and then doing all the closing from start to finish, could cost you $20,000 or more on a bigger purchase, on a, let's say, 100 unit to 200 unit purchase. If they're just reviewing the PSA, if they're not doing the closing, it might only cost you, you know, $1,000 or so. So it really is going to vary widely. I would be talking with attorneys. That would be my suggestion, talking with attorneys, finding out their fees, finding out what they think from start to finish. And they'll give you quotes prior to entering into business with them. So, you could probably say, it's going to cost you, you know, 1%, 1 to 1.5%, for an attorney to draft the PSA and take you through to closing. 1 to 1.5%.
Yeah, and that's just something that people need to budget for. Besides, you know, the actual purchase price, you know, there's other closing costs involved. So
yeah, absolutely.
So the next one on the list is property inspectors.
Yeah. So, you know, I'm myself, I'm a contractor. I've done a ton of properties. I flipped a lot of properties. I've been into, you know, I've been into a lot of different situations, and I still to this day will hire a property inspector to go through my buildings to make sure I don't miss anything. Cause it's just an extra set of eyes. That's what they do every single day. They look for problems in buildings. So it doesn't matter if you've done 100 purchases or 500 purchases, I would, no matter what, always get a property inspector to come in and look at your building. And for an apartment building, large apartment building, you know, 50 plus units, I would say they're only going to walk maybe 20% of the units, maybe even less, especially if it's like a 200 or 300 unit building. So they're going to walk some of the interiors. They're going to be looking at the mechanicals. They're going to be looking, so the furnaces and the ACs and stuff like that. They're going to be looking at the roofs. You might just get a specialized roofing inspector or roofing company to look at the roofs as well. They're going to look at the interior or exterior, So they're going to look at, you know, is the grading right? Is the brick spalling? Stuff like that. And they're going to give you a comprehensive report of what the building is, so that way you can make an informed decision if you want to move forward. So I would hire a property inspector, definitely. The other thing that I would do with an inspector, and this might be a specialized inspector, you might not be able to get your inspector to do that, or they might have it in-house as well, but I would get the sewer scoped. And then I would also have your property inspected for termites. Of course, if you're way up north like we are in Minnesota, you don't need to worry about termites. But when I go down into Ohio, into Kentucky, and farther down, you've got to worry about termites. So that's a big problem. And you want to make sure that's inspected as well.
Yeah, definitely. So the next one on the list is the lender.
Yeah, so obviously you want to make sure that if you put a property on contract, you can actually close the thing, right? So we want to be talking with lenders, being proactive and talking with lenders before we just get a $2 million project under a contract, because it costs a lot of money, right? If my last purchase, if I wouldn't have closed on it because I didn't have a lender, I would have been out probably 70 grand. I would have had to pay attorney fees. I would have had to pay up. Yeah. 70 grand. 80 grand. I would have had attorney fees. I would have a lender. I would have had, earnest money, inspection fees, all kinds of stuff. So it adds up. Surveyor, environmental study. So you want to make sure you have a lender in place. And then you got to know what type of loans there are. So there's a lot of different types of loans out there for apartment buildings. If you're going to be buying a building and getting a loan over $1 million, you can, and you're in a secondary or primary market, you can get Fannie Mae small balance, or you can get Fannie Mae or Freddie Mac small balance with a non-recourse, which is going to be by far your best terms. And that's only if that property is stable, right? So if that property is 80% occupied and you need to do some work to it, Fannie Mae or Freddie Mac won't touch it. But if the property is 92% occupied, maybe it needs some work, some updating, but it's 92% occupied and it's not bad. It just needs, you need to...
cosmetic stuff.
Yeah, you need to rip the carpet out. You need to, you're going to reface the cabinets. You're going to put in new countertops, stuff like that. But it's occupied, you're fine. You could get Fannie or Freddie with doing stuff like that. Go ahead.
I'm sorry. Do you typically go through a local bank in that market, or are you going to a broker that can shop different loans?
Yeah, you can do either way. So a broker is a great resource, especially when you're first getting started, because what they're going to do is they're going to shop loans, right? They're going to find the best loan for you, and they're going to actually find a loan for you. So they're going to look at bridge lenders if that's what your property is. So a bridge lender is like a lender that's going to do short-term, like a hard money lender for commercial, right? So they're going to do a shorter-term loan, maybe 3 years, and that's where you got a lot of heavy lifting. Low occupancy, and you still a lot of times will be non-recourse. you could go to your local bank if you have good relationships with them. Local banks can be great. Most local banks are going to be full recourse. So if you're going a loan under $1 million and it's fairly stabilized, a local bank would be a great option. And local banks a lot of times will do some pretty heavy rehab projects as well for you too. So local banks are a great contact. What I would be doing is calling as many local banks as you possibly can and finding out if they're in the appetite for lending to these types of projects. And then also calling some local brokers that can help get you loans too. And just finding out what your options are, and then finding out if you actually can get approved too. And if you can't get approved, what do you need to get approved? Do you need, a loan sponsor, we call them, which is basically somebody who signs the loan with you, who's you're going to likely have to pay. And if it's a recourse loan, you may not be able to find anybody, or you're going to have to pay them a lot. Now, if it's a non-recourse loan, you'll be able to find somebody, but you're still going to have to pay them enough, I guess,
So if somebody's putting together kind of a syndication, or they're bringing in investor partners because they themselves cannot take down the deal.
Yeah.
Are those investors typically signing on the loan, or how do you get qualified if you're counting on your investors for the money?
Yeah. So first, in the apartment world, when you're getting qualified for a loan, the lender looks heavily at the deal, right? So they are looking at the deal, making sure it meets their criteria, making sure it's got the 1.2 or 1.25 debt service coverage ratio. They want to see the building to make sure it works for them. And then they're going to also look at you, but it's not like residential single family. They don't put you under this big microscope, but they're going to look at, you know, your income and your debt and all that kind of stuff. One of the biggest things they look at is what's your net worth, and then how much liquidity do you have, right? So if you're doing a syndication, you're going to have some liquidity, right? Because you raised, let's say, $1 million for this loan. And if you did it right, you raised enough money for the down payment, for all the closing costs, and then for a really big, nice, healthy reserve account. By big, healthy reserve account, I mean like 9 months worth of mortgage payments.
Okay.
So if you did all that and raised all that money, well, then you've got, you know, nice, healthy account. They're going to also want to see, do you have some other money? So if you don't have any other money, that's not going to help. But then they're going to want to see your net worth. And they typically like to see your net worth at or above the purchase price. The loan amount. So if you're, you know, if you're getting a $4 million loan, you should have a net worth of $4 million. Now that's a lot, right? So if you don't have that, then you could either take your partners in the syndication and say, hey, anybody have that? But if you do that, what you're going to end up doing is giving them more money, right? So usually in a limited partnership, which is a syndication, you've got the general partner who is the head honcho. And then you've got the limited partners who are the investors. Usually the limited partners don't sign anything, right? Because they don't have 20%, 30%, 40% of the equity individually. They only have, you know, let's say 10% of the equity, you know. So usually they don't sign. If they do sign, you're giving them a few extra percentage of typically of the general partnership.
And then do you move them into a general partnership role?
So they still have their limited partnership role, right? So if they've got, and it really depends. You could be as creative as you want to be, right? Because it's syndication. It's how you want to set it up. You're setting up your own company structure. So it's not like there's a written rule in place. It's what works for you and what works for that sponsor, the loan sponsor. So, but typically, yeah. So you would have, let's say they gave you $100,000 and you were doing $1 million raise. So they're getting 10% of the limited partnership split. They would keep that. And then they would maybe get like 3% of your general partner money as well.
Okay.
So they're going to get a little bit money up front. They're going to get money. They're going to get paid throughout the deal.
Okay.
Sometimes you just pay them right up front. Sometimes maybe they take you, maybe you get a 2% sponsor fee. Maybe they say, hey, you know what? I'll sign on this loan. You give me that whole 2% sponsor fee right up front. It really depends on how you want to work the deal. It's up to you and it's up to them.
Okay. Say one thing going back to the banks. Have you found that any local banks don't want to work with out-of-state investors? Do they want their borrowers to be local to the property?
Yeah, that's huge. So if you think you're going to come from California or Minnesota and you think you're going to invest out of state and get a local bank to lend to you, think again, right? Okay. It's not that you can't, it's just that it's very difficult. You're going to get turned down more often than not. I never have gotten turned down for a mortgage until I started going out of state. And so I started going out of state, and the no's that I got is just like, what's wrong with me? You know, like, why am I getting so many no's? So yeah, if you're going out of state, you expect to get a lot of no's before you get a yes.
Okay.
And make sure you mention to them right away, hey, I'm an out of state investor. Especially if you don't have any properties, that's going to be even more difficult. I don't have any properties in the area. Will you lend to me? Yeah, we will. Are you sure? Because they will tell you that they will, and then they get halfway through the process and they go, hey, sorry, we can't lend to you because you're out of state. And you go, I told you that day one. You know, so make sure you're pounding it in their heads like, are you sure? Because I'm out of state. You know, I don't have any properties in this area. Are you sure? Once you get a few properties in the area and they're performing, then it gets a lot easier.
So if that's the norm, is it a better idea just to go straight to the brokers who have some different options?
Yes and no. Here would be what I say. If you can, and I would say if you can, if you're going to be out of state, if you can, buy a property that's over $1.3 million to get you to that one and above, that's stable with some value add, that would be the best way to do it. Because then you can get Fannie Mae, Freddie Mac, and they will lend anywhere. And they don't care that you're out of state. They care less that you're out of state. They want to see a team that's in state. So have your property manager be part of your team and all that kind of stuff. And you could actually make your property manager part of the general partnership too. That's a strategy that a lot of people do, and that can work really well too.
Do you find that the large management companies like to do that, or is it just the smaller ones that have more flexibility that are more willing to come in as a partner on the deal?
Yeah. You know, I'm not sure. I've only dealt with kind of mid-sized property management companies. I've never dealt with a really large, management company. A lot of those are dealing with the REITs and the really big properties. So I'm not sure. I would say just ask and find out. It really depends on what your goals are. You know, if you can get a property manager to put 50 grand or 100 grand into a property of yours, and also, you know, do the property management and maybe get a little part of the GP, I think that's a win for everyone.
Yeah. So the next person, team member on your list is going to be an insurance agent. What can you tell us about that?
Yeah. So, you know, basically make sure you've got insurance, and then make sure it's quality insurance. All the insurance is not the same. And so you're going to get quotes all over the board, and some of it will be good insurance and some of it will be insurance you don't really want. So just don't just go with the cheapest rates. Make sure you can compare them, and make sure you have a competent insurance agent that can explain the differences between them. If they can't explain the differences between them, they're not an agent you want to deal with. So try to, you know, work with a good, competent insurance agent that's actually going to look out for you, and you could tell them, look, this is kind of what I want. Of course, I don't want to pay a ton of money, but I do want good coverage in case this, and this happens. And don't skimp out. You know, if you're close to a flood zone, I would get flood insurance. Look what happened in Houston. If you're in a, you know, area that, I don't know, has certain, you know, close to earthquake area, but you're kind of right outside of it, I would probably get insurance for that. So good quality insurance is important. I had a property in the tornado zone. We had a tornado that came through Minneapolis back in like 2010 or 11 or something like that. And it hit one of my properties, caused about $30,000-$35,000 worth of damage. I had to do a new roof, we had to do new siding, repair some of the house itself, some chimney damage, stuff like that. And the good thing is my insurance company covered it, and it was like, you know, my $1,500 deductible, and that's all that there was. At the same time, there was a property owner that just bought up a duplex in Minneapolis in the same area, bought it for cash, California investor, and I was going to manage her duplex for her. And I was just about to sign, you know, the paperwork to manage her property. Called her up, said, hey, you've got some damage to your property. I can contact the insurance company for you and get the claim started. And she tells me, I've got no insurance. I bought the property cash and I didn't put any insurance on it. You know, luckily for her, the damage was only about like $15,000, but still $15,000 out of her pocket versus $1,500 out of her pocket, just for not having insurance. And she didn't even, that property she just bought like a month ago, and the damage hit. And after that, I said, look, I'm not going to manage. I don't want to manage your property, because she didn't want to put insurance on it after that even happened. I said, I'm not going to manage your property. Yeah. You're not going to put insurance on it. I just don't want to deal with that.
So, aside from, you know, losses due to natural disasters, you know, being in the rental business, you kind of have a target on your back with people that want to sue you for various reasons. Mm-hmm. So it's good to have, you know, liability coverage, even for those people who hopefully everybody is trying to do things correctly. You know, things still can happen, and people want to hold the landlord liable.
Yeah, you're right. Good liability insurance. And then, like, I have a umbrella. Is that what it's called? Umbrella policy as well. Yep. So you want to, you know, make sure you're covered. Like you said, people, you've got a target on your back. So.
Yep. Okay. Well, the next person on our team member list is a good contractor.
Yeah. And so contractors are fun, right? Maybe one of the least professional industries to deal with, and not saying all contractors are not professional, because that would be a wrong statement, but there's just a lot that are, because a lot of them are like one man or woman shows, and they're trying to be everything, right? So they're the business owner, they're the person doing the work, they're also their own bookkeeper, they're also their own salesperson, they're also their own this and this and this and this. So if you're giving them a lot of work, oftentimes they're just not going to be that professional, not going to be that responsive. They maybe can't handle it. So you've got to make sure you're dealing with professionals in the industry, for one. And then you're going to be better served dealing with an outfit that has employees, especially if, now I'm talking, if you're doing a multifamily renovation, let's say 50 unit renovation, not maybe a full blown, but you know, some cosmetic stuff. You want a company that can handle that, because if you're using a mom and pop, it's going to be tough for them to handle it. Just like a property manager, it might be tough for them to handle a big property. So you want to be, you'll be better served paying more money for an outfit that can actually handle the job that you're asking them to do. The other thing, when dealing with contractors, make sure you have a contract signed with them. And I would make sure that there's deadlines in place. I would make sure that there's penalties if they don't hit those deadlines. And then also make sure that you have that payment plan or payment schedule. It's all spelled out, cut and dry. This is when you get paid. You don't get paid 20% up front and then 20% October 5th. You don't get paid like that. You get paid after you've done these tasks, this amount. And then you get paid after you've done these tasks, this amount. Or once you receive your rough in sign off by the city, you get paid this amount. Once you receive your, you don't get paid in full until all the work is completed and you've received the final sign off from the city. Don't get paid in full. And so
you don't want to lose the contractor before the inspector signs off on it.
Exactly. And I've done that. I've had that mistake before where they're done with their work. I give them their check and then it's pulling teeth just to get that final sign off done. And then you find out that's because there's a couple mistakes. And it's like, now it's really hard. So, With the payment thing, I think it's a really, you're better served if you can find a contractor that can handle several weeks without payment. Where you're going to get in trouble with contractors or the contractors that need money today, and everybody I get needs money, but you don't want that contractor that needs money every single week, that needs payment, that's going to ask for payment before they've done the work because they, you know, I can't get any work done because I don't have any money. Well, wait a second. You haven't done that work. Oh yeah. Just can I get a draw ahead of time? And the answer to that always needs to be no. So, set the payment schedule up spell it out and stick to it. Just be careful. Watch your back. Contractors are great, but there's some that aren't. So try to deal with the good ones.
Those smaller companies that maybe they could be more flexible with you up front, or and maybe you feel like you'd be more flexible with them up front and just to get the job done. But the problem will be consistency, going forward. Can they keep working for you? You know, are they going to stay motivated? Are they going to stay ahead of out of the money, so.
Well, and one of the things to ask them, right? Because you can still deal with a small professional company. My brother is a contractor, and he runs a small company that's extremely professional. It's him and his partner, and I think they have a few employees, but they sub a lot of things out. So that's one thing to ask. Hey, we're doing this. Who does the drywall? If they say, "Well, I do the drywall," okay. Who does the cabinets? Well, I do the cabinets. Who does the tile? I do the tile. Who does the painting? I do the painting. Can they handle your job? There's no way they can handle your job. But if you ask them those questions, they go, well, yeah, we sub that out to this person, or this employee does that, or, that. So you just got to make sure that they're not trying to take all the jobs and do them themselves. You want to make sure they're handing those jobs off to the professionals. And they've got a team, like we're talking about, they've got a team in place.
Yep.
So.
Cool. Well,
man. All right. Go ahead.
Okay. So the next person on our team list is the appraiser.
Yeah. So the bank hires the appraiser, right? So you don't need to worry about an appraiser. I don't agree with that fully. I think appraisers can be very valuable to have on your team. They do a couple things, right? So appraiser can help back up your numbers, and they're without them actually going on the property, you can just pay them as a consultant. They can come onto the property if you want, or they can do the research, from their office and find out the comps and all that kind of stuff and give you an accurate picture. And you say, well, the broker can do that. Well, a lot of times in commercial, you're dealing with the broker that's dealing with the seller, that has a contract with the seller, and then they're trying to represent you as well. Might be a little conflict of interest in there. So not always is the broker 100% accurate. And some brokers are great at being very transparent and accurate. Some brokers are not. So you might want another person to give you an idea of what they think the comps are and where they think the value of that property truly is. So I think that's extremely valuable. Also, when you're looking to sell the property, same thing. Broker can or appraiser can help you with that as well. And then the last thing is they're looking at a lot of properties, right? They're viewing properties. They're seeing properties that are distressed. They're seeing properties that they know the seller wants to sell. They're a good contact for finding potential properties. So if you can build a relationship with some good commercial appraisers, that might be a good source of deal flow as well. Yeah. So that's another reason for them. And yeah, actually, all these team members are good potential source of deal flow. Don't think that they're just one dimensional. These people are seeing a lot of things, and they might know, hey, you know what? I was just over at that Parkview Flats and that thing's a disaster. And those guys are penny pinching. And man, that owner said he's so sick of being in business. Whoa, okay. There's my lead right there.
Yeah. I was just going to mention that, a real estate agent definitely needs to know values of the property and of rents. But, that's just one subset of their skills and abilities. Their main thing is to sell
the property. Yeah, they're trying to maximize the value of the property. That's it.
Yeah. So appraiser, their job is not to sell. Their job is to evaluate and put a value on the property or the rents.
Yep.
So they're the specialists when it comes to value.
Yeah, absolutely. You're right. That's a big difference. So cool.
Cool. Next person on our list is the 1031 specialist.
Yeah. And so if you're going to sell and you don't want to pay taxes, you got to talk to 1031 specialists. They're going to help you do it the right way. And they're going to help make sure you stay out of trouble to where all of a sudden you're going to have to pay taxes. They're also the intermediary. So you need one. If you're going to do a 1031 exchange, you have to have somebody handling your money. And I guess you could just use some random Joe on the street, but who wants to trust some random person? So they're going to be that person, that third party that, you know, basically handles all that transaction. They're going to make sure you do it right. And before you even are ready to buy or sell, I would be talking with them to plan it, you know, make sure it's set up the right way from the start. So we don't have to change things around last minute or, you know, maybe get stuck in a situation where we just can't 1031 exchange. So, if you just want to pay your taxes and you don't want to 1031 it, well, then you don't need one of these 1031 exchange specialists on your team. So,
yeah. You know, the time constraints of a 1031 is the big reason why you want to know what you're doing.
Yeah. Yeah, absolutely. I mean, it's only, most of them charge you a pretty minimal fee to start the process. So you might lose out on $500 if you can't do the 1031 exchange, which, you know, it's $500. You know, I don't want to lose out on it, but it's not like it's $20,000 that you're going to have to spend. But yeah, they're going to help you navigate that whole process from start to finish. It's in their best interest to get this thing done. So they want you to do it and to be successful, and they're going to help you along the way. So it's a great coach to have.
Yep. Okay. The next person is an accountant.
Yeah. Obviously you want a great accountant. They maybe should be way higher up on the list. I really didn't put the list in order other than property manager, but they are extremely important to have on your team to make sure you're keeping yourself out of trouble and also make sure you're taking advantage of all the tax law that is available. So a good accountant is going to know real estate. They're going to have real estate clients, and they're going to maybe even have real estate themselves, and not only just real estate, but the type of real estate that you're buying. So if you're buying 100 unit apartment complexes, you want to make sure they're dealing with property owners that have 100 unit type of apartment complexes. If you're buying a triple net Walgreens lease, you're going to want to find an accountant that deals with those types of clients. So you're going to want to deal with somebody who's very savvy in the real estate industry. And you might want an accountant and a tax strategist too. I mean, that's a lot of people do that. They just have their accountant that does their accounting. They got their bookkeeper, does their books, and then they got a tax strategist or a tax attorney that helps them through all the taxes and really plans for tax mitigation. Is that the right word?
Sounds good.
Sounds good to me.
So, okay, cool. The next person on the list is a cost segregation specialist. That's probably one that not as many other people are familiar with compared to.
Yeah. Yeah, so mostly your accountants don't do the cost seg. So you want to have a cost segregation. They're going to work directly with your accountant, but they're going to go through your property and they're going to look specifically at everything in your property. They're going to cost segregate that. So you can depreciate certain things at different levels. And now with the new tax code, actually, you can do 100% depreciation on a lot of things right away first year. So if you have a big tax year, you could write off a lot potentially. So you just need to decide if it's for you. If you're going to 1031 exchange it, it might be right for you. If you're going to hold it for a shorter period of time, like 1 year, it may not be good for you. If you're going to hold it for like 5 years, maybe a great thing. If you're going to hold it for 50 years, it may not be that strategic as well. It really depends on you and your situation. So you want to have somebody that can explain the differences to you and whether it's right or wrong, and they're going to work again with your accountant to help that, or your tax strategist to help whether it's right, wrong, and how we should do it. We can go about it at all kinds of different levels.
So. Cool. Yep. Okay. And then the next is an environmental company.
Yeah. So you want to make sure your property is not tainted, basically. Does it have a ton of nasty stuff going on in there? You have lead in the water? Do you have lead paint? Do you have whatever, asbestos, stuff like that? So you just want to make sure you know what you're getting when you buy the property. So you want an environmental study, at least a phase one done prior to purchase. If they find something that's suspect, then you might want to pay for a phase two if you still want to go forward with that purchase.
Yep. And sometimes the inspectors handle that, or sometimes they're separate.
Right, right. Yeah. Larger inspection companies might have that in-house. Most of your inspectors that are mid to small size companies don't have that in-house, but some of the larger ones do.
Okay.
Yeah.
Okay. And then the last one on our list today, maybe the most important, is investors and partners.
Yeah. So we'll spend a lot of time on, we'll spend a whole episode, I think, or maybe even two on investors and partners and syndications and how do you do that. And I plan on having Zach Robbins, who is my securities attorney, on the show. So he'll talk more about securities, you know, and crowdfunding and stuff like that. But yeah, you want to make sure if you're going to have investors that you have the right types of partners. You just don't want anybody in on your investments. You want to make sure they're either sophisticated investors if they're not accredited, or they are accredited investors. You got to decide if you want non-accredited investors at all, because the probably the quote unquote safest way is to have only accredited investors, but it might not be possible for you, or you just might want non-accredited investors. Like I enjoy having some, not a ton, but I enjoy having some non-accredited investors because I think it allows the have-nots to have. So you've got to, but you've got to make sure they're sophisticated and they meet the rules. They understand what they're getting into. And then partners. I mean, you having a partner in your business can be very, very helpful, especially if you have got some weaknesses, which everybody has, and they've got some good strengths that complement your weaknesses. So having partners is also a very good thing, and can really help you advance your company in the direction. So looking at partners, investors, they're a very critical part to growing a business. If you want to buy one apartment building, partner investor might not be that big of a deal. If you want to buy one or two, maybe just do it on your own if you can. But if you're going to grow and scale and you want, you know, 1,000, 2,000 units, it might be a lot, or it's going to be a lot more challenging to get to that without investors and without partners.
Yep. Very good. Well, you know, that's quite a lot that we covered today.
Yeah, probably too much.
So we should wrap it up. But just so people know, next week we're planning to go over how to underwrite a deal and and how to, you know, just prepare those numbers and kind of be conservative so that you're not getting, you know, over your head in that purchase. So.
Yeah, right now in this market, I think that's really important, is to make sure you're underwriting properly. You can buy in any single market possible. You can buy in hot markets, cold markets, and anywhere in between, but you just got to make sure your underwriting is solid and you dot the I's, cross the T's, and do it right. Otherwise, you're going to get yourself burned when the market changes. So, and nobody wants to do that. So, looking forward to next week. And I think that's really it. We'll wrap up and call it a day. Make every day a Saturday. John, where can people reach us?
They can reach us on a lot of places. You can find us on Facebook, YouTube. You can find us on iTunes. And be sure while you're there, give this episode a thumbs up. Share it with your friends.
Yeah, and on iTunes, they can give us a 5-star rating review. That would help our show, help spread the word. And they can go on to Facebook and leave us a comment if you want us to talk about a certain topic on Hump Day Hustle or cover something that we maybe missed a little bit. We can go back and potentially cover something like that. So I think that's it. John, you have a great rest of the day.
You too. Take care.
Awesome. Hey, are you looking to expand and grow your business? Are you looking for that edge, that next step up, that paradigm shift? Well, one of the best ways to get you there is through a mentor or a coach. And today's sponsor, Trevor McGregor, he is the man. He's going to get you to be laser focused, to get you onto that next level. And I know from experience dealing with Trevor, he is a master coach, peak performance coach, well over 10,000 coaching hours through clients all over the world, and he helps you achieve better health, more wealth and freedom and contribution than you ever thought possible. Have that coach that holds your feet to the fire. Go on to Trevor's website, coachwithtrevor.com. Again, it's coachwithtrevor.com. And there you can get a free strategy session with Trevor. And you can decide if he's the right fit for you and you're the right fit for him. Again, it's coachwithtrevor.com. You will not be disappointed.